Welcome to Across the Desk, where we discuss entrepreneurship, small business, and everything in between. Hey, it's Elizabeth Plouffe, and welcome to Across the Desk, and we're having a session today of Ballsy in Review. And Ballsy is the Women in Entrepreneurship group that I founded about a year and a half ago, just because I wanted a group that was specifically for women and specifically about actually building your business versus, you know, wine tastings and whatever. So I know that sounded really mean, but I really prefer to work on my business doing stuff like that and then save wine tastings, although I don't drink, for when I go out with my friends. So this week it was really cool. One of the things that we started talking about this week, two things actually, three. My goodness, it was a full meeting. We've launched a program initially called Momentum Makers, but Holly Simmons, who is going to be leading the program, I approached her today and I said, I wonder if we could call it Making Shift Happen, sort of a play on making shit happen, a little more politically correct. And she seemed open to it. So regardless, the program is it's a buddy building system, or a building buddy system, so that if you're working on particular problems or issues, mostly for your business, but if there's some personal things that are holding you back on moving forward on something, then this program is specifically developed to be a small group activity to hold you accountable for setting and achieving goals, which I love because it's really, really easy to set goals on your own and then justify not working on them and not moving forward with them. And a friend of mine, Hazel Vanderwerken, who I've spoken about before, she runs or owns Making Change Happen, which is creating a wow experience for your customers. And she was my build buddy for a while, and I really moved forward in a terrific way, just having somebody to talk to and noodle with and be accountable to. And so noodling takes us into our second topic that we covered in Ballsy. And noodling is what I call when you're working on a problem. You're kind of chewing on it and you're going back and forth on it. And how do you move forward, or do you gather more resources, or what do you do? And one of the reasons I brought it up as a topic is that I think a lot of us get caught up in noodling and really lose track of how far off track it takes us. And, you know, noodling could be considered busy work, where you think of that as a way of working on your business. It's really not. And one of the reasons I raised that at the group this week is because I noodle better when I'm talking to somebody. When I noodle on my own, really not quite as effective, because I get frustrated and you're too close to the situation. And when you're wise enough to bring other people into your problems to help you solve them, you know, you're taking advantage in a positive way of their expertise. And maybe they've run into the problem before. Maybe they can just give you a swift kick in the ass and say, hey, you know what? You're just messing around. Like, let it go. It's not really an issue. You're just avoiding the hard work that you need to do, which is what my friend Noreen did for me last week. And it was amazing. It's moved stuff forward, which has been awesome. So we talked about that, the value of noodling, the best way to noodle. And when it's time to just, you know, throw out the noodle and get off your ass and just do something. And the last topic that I introduced, I'm reading a book right now, which I'm going to be reviewing on Wise Word Wednesdays. And it's a book called Ask For It, How Women Can Use the Power of Negotiation to Get What They Really Want. And it's by Linda Babcock and Sarah Lashever. And I apologize if I'm saying that incorrectly. And they're authors of a book called Women Don't Ask. I haven't read that one. Picked this one up. It was not a typical purchase for me, because my experience in the past is that books that are written for women in business, for me anyway, I find them sometimes, and I'm trying not to blanket statement because that's not really fair, because I'm sure there's some really good ones out there. I just find them written from a really weird point of view, and it's not one that I can usually relate to. I just finished another one, and it's Smart Canadian Women Entrepreneurs or something to that effect. And I had high expectations for the book. I'm going to be reviewing that one as well. I believe I finished it. But it was so hard to digest the information within that book, because to me, it was not derogatory. It was pandering. It just wasn't terrific language. And the whole messaging was, you know, you poor women, come on now, put your big girl bras on and get out there and do it. You can do it. Rah, rah, cheerleader. And just the cover of the book and the initial messaging of the book, nothing led me to believe that the language that they would use would be so condescending, to my interpretation anyway. And so I had a really hard time pulling out what was probably a lot of useful information. So I may have to go back and look again because the language just really got in the way. This book, however, not having the same problem. There is a little bit of, to me, the common denominator of, you know, women are all not able to negotiate on their own and whatever. And maybe I'm having that gut reaction because it's true. We tend to, and we discuss this at Ballsy, so I feel quite confident in stating this, that for the most part, I think when a man goes into negotiation, there's no emotion attached. It's very surgical, which it should be. It's just, it's all business. There's no personal aspect. And a member of our group, we talked about, say, for an example, when you're purchasing a car and you go in and you negotiate. And her thought process was, well, if you negotiate the price too low, then that impacts that guy's ability, if he's a family man, you know, to take care of his family and whatever. And I looked at her and I said, exactly. And she said, what do you mean? I said, we go in and we consider the big picture, the bigger ramifications. Is that going to impact this person personally? You know, if we're asking for a raise at a not-for-profit, how is that going to affect the end users? Is there going to be less programs? You know, we take all of this crud and we undervalue ourselves so that nobody else is inconvenienced and nobody else is upset and whatever. And that's such a crock of crap. I mean, it's not, because it goes with our core values and what have you, but it's to our detriment that we negotiate this way or we don't negotiate at all. We assume that the other person is going to do the right thing or that our skills will get recognized, and it doesn't happen. We have to learn how to speak up. And it was really interesting to listen to the group and their interpretation of negotiation and what influences it and what have you. And I'm going to pull up my notes. And a few of the things that we talked about was how the level of need affects your willingness to negotiate, nurture versus negotiate. You know, what is the actual win? And as a woman, can, you know, are we okay with the win impacting that person's family or that personal circumstance or what have you? And the other thing that we talked about, which I found really interesting, and it was interpreted two different ways, which was really cool, was how your previous experiences with negotiating or being in a sale impact your future negotiations. And so my example for this was when I was 20, my dad passed away, and I hate to use the word fortunate, not really fortunate. I was the recipient of a life insurance policy that at the time allowed me to pay cash for a car. And I decided to purchase a VW GTI, which was a zippy little 5-speed sports car. I had more speeding tickets with that darn car, but it was really cool. Anyway, so knowing that I was going out into what is typically at the time, keep in mind, this is now 1991, a while ago, a man's territory, I actually took a guy with me. And as we were going to the different car dealerships, it was really interesting to watch how the salesmen, because it was, I think, 99% salesmen, automatically gravitated to the guy who, in retrospect, was completely useless and knew nothing about cars and had no idea how to negotiate and was, you know, he was decorative versus functional. And it took me saying to them, hey, I'm the one signing the check. I'm paying cash for whatever car I get. You might want to talk to me a little more. And it was really interesting because sometimes it just didn't matter who was paying. They still dealt with the guy I was with more than me. And in those negotiations, initially, I was strong enough to walk away from some of them. But the only reason was I didn't really want the car. It hadn't met all the criteria that I wanted and what have you. And then I saw this VW GTI and I thought, you know what? This is cool. This has got a decent amount of space. It's going to be good on gas, you know, those kind of logics. So I ordered a red one with a sunroof. I was really excited. And I ordered a 5-speed, even though I didn't even know how to drive stick, and which I know sounds a bit goofy, but I learned. And I also signed up to do a scuba diving course based on the timeline of me learning how to drive this car. So I get to the dealership on the day I'm supposed to pick this vehicle up, and I promise you this story ends soon. And what's waiting for me is a black VW GTI with air conditioning. And I had been dealing with this guy. I don't even imagine I got anything off the price of the car, even though I was paying cash. And I said, well, that's not what I ordered. And he looked at me and he's like, well, that's what you're getting. And I was so taken aback. And I just didn't have the skill set at, you know, 2021 and just having lost my dad and never done this before to fight back. But I do remember taking a bit of a stand in the showroom and looking at him and saying, well, you know, where's the floor mats? Aren't you throwing floor mats in? And he's like, nope, you're going to have to pay for those. And I remember thinking in my head, what the hell do I do now? Like, he knows he's got me over a barrel. It's not the car I ordered. He's not throwing in floor mats. I got no deal whatsoever on this. I mean, to say I got screwed was, you know, that's putting it mildly. But what's happened is that every car dealership since pays the price for what that guy did. So now I am, when I walk on the lot, I try to be friendly and approachable and all those good things. But the second I sense that a negotiation is being skewed in the dealership's favor, I get my back up and I dig in right away. I just helped my mom buy a new car and over at Leggett Kia here in Burlington. And Aaron was terrific, you know, a great sales guy. You should go and check him out. He's also a rapper. I have to look up his name again. Demon Gator? Demon? Shoot. I'll try and find it. But anyway, he was great, but I was constantly listening and watching. And when it got to the final paperwork, there were a couple of things that didn't transfer well out of the conversation with Aaron to when we were in with the finance guy. And I immediately felt the memories of that first guy who ripped me off coming up. And I got belligerent, like not rude, but I definitely body posture changed, voice changed, everything changed. Because I thought, you know what? I am not losing power in this negotiation. You are not ripping my mom off, intentional or otherwise. And this isn't going to go that way. And it turned out just to be a misunderstanding. They did an amazing job. They're a great dealership from my experience so far. They treated my mom extremely well, and that was great. But any experience I have now at a car dealership is tainted by the memory of that first time I bought a car. And so I often wonder now when I go into other negotiations if those experiences now color how I engage, or in the past if I've tried to negotiate and it's gone badly and, you know, you end up feeling like a 12-year-old in the principal's office or whatever. It sort of makes you gun shy to try again. So it was an interesting topic. You know, the benefits of noodling and the different ways that you can be more successful when you're noodling, when you're trying to figure out how to move forward on a project or you're trying to solve a problem or what have you, and when to give up, you know, or when to call in help, whichever works. And that emotional attachment to negotiation. And we're moving forward with that topic as well. So there was quite a lot of interest in it. So we're going to do some more extensive discussion on how we can negotiate better. And part of that has to do with, you know, establishing your value proposition and evaluating your business and making sure that you've gone through and sort of constructed your projects and everything to be in a strong position when you are negotiating with a client or an organization. And what are the other things that we talked about? Oh, stake in the ground for goals. So we'll wrap up with that, because stake in the ground to me, when we were talking about making shift happen, the Momentum Makers program that we're launching, and thank you so much, Holly Simmons. Check her out at goldenlasso.com for leading that program. And, you know, they say within negotiation language that putting a stake in the ground is, I think it's called a BATNA, is, and for the life of me, I can't remember what that acronym means, but it's important. Putting a stake in the ground with your goals is extremely important as well to achieving them. So if you're willing to put a stake in the ground when you're negotiating with somebody else, then it's time to find a way to put a stake in the ground for yourself when you're achieving goals. Women as well, I'm terrific at fighting for other people. You go after my mom, God help you, you better start running, because nobody goes after my mom. You go after anybody in my family, I'll fight to the teeth for them. Comes to me, depends on how it goes. It really does. Sometimes I can do great. When it gets down to other things and the negotiation is a little more shaky, my stake in the ground gets a little wobbly. So I'm going to work on that. So I'd really love to hear how you put your stake in the ground. You know, what do you use to stand strong on if you're negotiating or if you're setting a goal, and how are you going to move that forward? And, you know, what's your cutoff? Sorry, I have a dry throat and a bit of a cold. What's your cutoff on noodling? You know, noodling can be great, but it can really waste a shit ton of time. And that's not great for your business. You know, it's definitely not great for your business, as is not negotiating properly. So that's what we did with Ballsy in Review this week, our Ballsy Women in Business. You can check it out on, we're on Facebook. It's a closed group, actually. But if you go to MCV Communications, which is my business, there's a page there on Ballsy and what we do. So check it out on MCV Communications, Ballsy Women in Business, if you'd like to join us. We're here in Burlington. We meet at Pane Fresco on the first Wednesday of every month for breakfast. And I'd love to hear if you've negotiated anything recently and how that went. And did you get above what you were initially offered? You know, did you counter offer? Did you engage in that little dance, and how'd that go for you? And what do you do to achieve your goals? You know, if you're interested in learning more about making shift happen, then we are going to be posting some information about that. Other than that, thank you so much for joining me. And I will be talking to you soon. This is Elizabeth Plouffe with Across the Desk, and today is Ballsy in Review. You can check me out on Twitter at MCV Communications or Instagram at MCV Comms. I'm growing my Instagram because I switched from personal to business. So if you go and check it out, there's some cool stuff there. Or MCV Communications online. So I hope you're having a fantastic day, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.